Picture this. You're sitting across a table from your examiner. You've been through every class of airspace in ground school. You know the rings, the lines, the colors on the sectional. You know you need to call the tower before entering Class Delta. You know the clearance into Class Bravo has to be explicit. You've got it. And then the examiner slides the sectional toward you, points to a small grass strip with no ring around it, no shading nearby, nothing. Just a symbol sitting out there in white space. And she says, "What class of airspace is that airport in? If your first instinct is to look for something to read on the chart and come up empty, this episode is for you. I'm Pattern, and this is Traffic Pattern on Radio Hangar. Let's talk about class golf. Before we get into it, shout out to our friends at AviationSoul.com. They make challenge coins for every step of the journey. Got your first solo? There's a coin for that. Private pilot, instrument, commercial, they've got you covered. Great way to mark the milestones that matter. AviationSoul.com. All right, class golf. Here's something I wish someone had told me when I was training. The way most ground school courses teach airspace, they go through the classes in order, Class Alpha, Class Bravo, Charlie, Delta, Echo. They spend a lot of time on Bravo because it's the big ring around the major airports. They spend time on Delta because you have to make that radio call before entering. And then they get to Echo and things get a little complicated, but they push through it. And then the lesson ends. What gets skipped or gets 30 seconds of attention right at the finish line is the airspace that isn't any of those. The airspace that exists at the bottom of the pile below everything else. That's class golf. The formal definition is this. Class golf is airspace that has not been designated as Class Alpha, Bravo, Charlie, Delta, or Echo. That's it. It's the airspace that's left over after everything else is accounted for. In the United States, class golf starts at the surface in many places and extends upward until it runs into one of the other classes. Here's the mental model I use when I'm teaching this. Think of the national airspace system as a stack of layers. At the top, from 18,000 feet mean sea level up to flight level 600, you've got Class Alpha. That's controlled airspace. If you're in it, you're on an instrument flight plan. You're talking to ATC. You're in the system. No VFR up there. Come down from that, and you hit Class Echo. Class Echo covers a lot of ground. From 14,500 feet means sea level up to 18,000. The entire contiguous United States is Class Echo. Most of your cross-country flying in the middle altitudes is happening in Class Echo. Come down further, and things get more local. Class Echo can also start at 1,200 feet above ground level. That's the transition area you see marked on your sectional with a blue veil or shading. Come down even further and it might start at 700 feet above ground level. That's the magenta shading on your sectional. Those transition areas exist to provide instrument flight protection around airports that have instrument approaches. But underneath all of that, from the surface up to where the controlled airspace begins, you have class golf. Now here's where pilots get confused on the sectional. How do you actually identify class golf on the chart? The answer is that class golf is shown by the absence of coloring, not by the presence of it. Where you see magenta shading fading out toward white on your sectional, that fade is telling you something. Inside the shading, Class Echo starts at 700 feet above ground level. Outside it, where it's white, Class Echo might not start until 1200 feet. And underneath 1200 feet, that's class golf. The way I describe it to students, the colored airspace on your sectional is marked. Class golf is the unmarked airspace at the bottom. At many airports in rural areas, especially grass strips and small private fields, the airport itself sits in class golf. That's the grass strip your examiner pointed to. No tower, no instrument approach that would create a surface area of controlled airspace. The airport is in class golf from the surface up. So what does that mean practically? A few things, and this is where it gets important. First, communications. In class golf, there's no communication requirement. You don't need a radio. You don't need a transponder. You can take off from a class golf airport without calling anyone, without squawking anything, without talking to a soul. Now, that doesn't mean you shouldn't make radio calls. Using the common traffic advisory frequency at a non-towered airport is still best practice for traffic separation, but the regulations don't require it the way they would in Class Echo surface area or Class Delta. Second, no ATC separation services. In controlled airspace, ATC is providing separation between IFR traffic and handling traffic flow. In class golf, there is no ATC separation. You are responsible for see and avoid. Completely third. And this is the one that catches pilots flat-footed. The weather minimums are different. Let's talk about the VFR weather minimums, because this is tested on the written exam and on the oral, and students mix them up every single time. For Class Bravo, Charlie, Delta, and Echo above 700 feet, your VFR minimums are 3 statute miles of flight visibility and cloud clearances of 500 feet below, 1,000 feet above, and 2,000 feet horizontal. 3 miles vis, 500 below the clouds, 1,000 above, 2,000 horizontal. You've probably heard that grouping before. Class Golf is different. In Class Golf below 1,200 feet above ground level during the day, you need only 1 statute mile of flight visibility. And the cloud clearance requirement is clear of clouds. That's the rule. 1 mile and clear of clouds. That's it. Think about how different that is. In controlled airspace, you can't be within 500 feet of a cloud. In Class Golf below 1,200 AGL during the day, you just have to be clear of them. Now, here's the one that people miss. At night, in Class Golf below 1,200 feet above ground level, the minimums change. Night VFR in Class Golf below 1,200 AGL. 3 statute miles of visibility and cloud clearances of 500 feet below, 1,000 above, 2,000 horizontal. Same as controlled airspace. Why? Because at night, see and avoid becomes dramatically harder. The FAA recognized that the reduced daytime minimums work when you can see traffic, terrain, obstacles at night. 1 mile is not enough to keep yourself out of trouble. This is the trap. Pilot flies out of a Class Golf airport in the late afternoon. Conditions are 2 miles visibility, overcast at 3,000 feet. In Class Golf below 1,200 AGL in the daytime, technically legal because you've got more than 1 mile and you're clear of clouds when you're below 3,000. Now the flight takes longer than expected. Pilot is still out there at last light transitioning into night. The visibility requirement just jumped from 1 mile to 3 miles. The cloud clearance requirements just kicked in. A legal condition became a marginal one without anyone changing anything about the weather. That's a real scenario, not theoretical. Above 1,200 feet in Class Golf, but still below 10,000 mean sea level, you're back to 1 mile and the 500, 1,000, 2,000 clearances during the day, and 3 miles with those same clearances at night. And if you're in Class Golf above 10,000 mean sea level, which is unusual in most of the country but not everywhere, your minimums go up significantly. 5 statute miles visibility, 1,000 feet below, 1,000 feet above, 1 statute mile horizontal. The ACS doesn't ask you to memorize the table by rote. What it asks is that you demonstrate understanding. You need to know where Class Golf exists, what rules apply there, and what weather minimums you're operating under. Your examiner will set up scenarios to test that. Here's something I wish someone told me when I was a student. When you're flying cross-country at a lower cruise altitude, say below 3,500 feet in a lot of the Midwest and Southeast, you may be transitioning in and out of Class Golf without realizing it. You take off from a towered airport, you're in Class Delta. You climb through the Class Echo surface area, and you level off inside the transition area at 1,200 feet AGL. You're in controlled airspace, but when you fly over a patch of terrain where there's no instrument approach, no transition area, and no designated Class Echo floor, you might briefly be in Class Golf even though you haven't descended. Check your sectional. If you're flying at an altitude below where the blue shading indicates the Class Echo floor and you're outside any designated airspace, you're in Class Golf. Your minimums just changed. Let me give you a practical scenario to make this concrete. You're departing from a rural non-towered airport, no instrument approach, sitting in Class Golf. It's a hazy summer morning. Visibility looks like about 1.5 miles in the haze, overcast at 2,000 feet. Can you legally take off and fly VFR daytime? Class Golf below 1,200 AGL, 1 mile visibility, clear of clouds. You've got 1.5 miles and you're below the cloud layer, not inside it. By regulation, yes, you meet the minimums. Now here's the instructor question. Should you? That's a different analysis. 1.5 miles visibility means you're not seeing far ahead of you. If there's traffic, if there's rising terrain, if there's an antenna that isn't on your chart, your reaction time is very short. The regulation sets a floor for legality, not a standard for good judgment. 1 mile VFR in Class Golf is a minimum. It is not a recommendation. The Aeronautical Information Manual lays out the philosophy well. The basic VFR weather minimums exist so pilots can see and avoid traffic and terrain. Just because you meet the minimums doesn't mean the flight is safe. Here's another Class Golf nuance that comes up on the oral. What happens when a towered airport's control zone closes at night? When a Class Delta tower closes, the Class Delta goes away. The controlled airspace at the surface ceases to exist as a delta. Depending on the airport and whether it has a published instrument approach, it may become a Class Echo surface area. But if it doesn't have that designation, when the tower closes, that surface area goes back to Class Golf. That matters for a couple of reasons. Communications. When the tower is open, you establish two-way contact before entering Class Delta. When the tower closes and it's Class Golf, no communication required. But now you're also without ATC services. No one's watching the radar for you. No one's issuing traffic advisories. It's back to see and avoid. Also, the ATIS might still be broadcasting. The automated terminal information service records play around the clock at many airports. The presence of an ATIS does not mean the tower is open. Always check the chart supplement entry for the airport. That entry tells you the tower hours and what the airspace becomes when the tower isn't staffed. Let me walk through how to read the sectional for this one more time, because this is where a lot of students struggle. Magenta shading, fading from dark to light as it moves away from an airport, indicates a Class Echo floor at 700 feet above ground level. Blue shading, or a blue veil, indicates a 1,200-foot AGL Class Echo floor. White space, where there's no shading and no dashed circles, that's Class Golf up to where the area-wide Class Echo begins. In most of the contiguous United States, that area-wide Class Echo starts at 1,200 feet, but don't assume. Look at the chart. Some terrain elevations push those floors differently, and sectionals occasionally have notes for specific areas. The practice I assign every student is this. Take a local sectional, pick 3 or 4 airports in the vicinity that you regularly fly over or near, and for each one, trace the airspace layer by layer. What class is it at the surface? Where does it transition to another class? What are the VFR minimums at your typical cruise altitude over each one? Do that exercise and you will never be confused about this again. The examiner is looking for the same thing every time, not just the memorized answer. The ability to look at a real chart, identify real airspace, and apply the correct rules to a real scenario. Walk through it the way we did here. Name the class, name the altitude, name the time of day, name the minimums, then take the follow-up. Is it legal? And is it smart? The FAR AIM, the FAA's Pilot's Handbook of Aeronautical Knowledge, and the Aeronautical Chart User's Guide are the sources I'd point you to for the full breakdown. The minimums table in the pilot's handbook is particularly clear if you want to see the full grid laid out. Find us at radiohangar.com. I'm Pattern. Know what airspace you're in before you're in it, not after.